Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you stopped by this morning. It's Friday, which is a big sigh of relief for so many of you worker bees out there today. One of my grandchildren got up this morning and came out of the bedroom and looked at me standing there in his jammies and goes, "Oh, my God, Graham, one more day." I thought to myself, oh, geez, do I remember what a world was like when that's all I worried about, if today was the last day of school? I don't think I can remember back that far. Today is recap day, and we are going to talk about Monday's show, which was recognition of Martin Luther King. And then we did quite a bit of conversation about augmentation, breast augmentation, and breast reductions. Tuesday, we went to our Izzy Kalman workbook, and we talked about Bullies to Buddies. And then Wednesday, we had a great show with Monica Swift and Shelley and myself in regard to natural treatment of cancer and the downside of chemicals versus using food-grade quality medicinal properties or medicinal products that are better for you in the long run, that don't have a quarter of the side effects of a lot of our drugs that are out there today to treat things. Of course, we really slaughtered chemotherapy and radiation, by the way. Thursday, we talked about our poor little girl that we've been keeping a real close eye on, Shaheen McMath, and about the fact that her parents' rights are being slowly whittled away with the rest of our countries. And we also talked on Wednesday, I forgot to mention this, about different things that you can take that boost your immunity. So I'm going to bring Shell in. I want to get started on the shows because it seems like on Fridays we run out of time before we get to Thursday's show. So good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey. Yeah, that's true. We do. You and I sidebar a lot.
Yes. There are a lot of sidebars. That's true. Well, and we have so many things that bother us about society and our world today, that one thing leads to another. It's like a major, snowball effect when we get talking. So, and then when we have a third person that adds in, oh my God, you never know where it's going to go. But I think we bring up a lot of questions. Some we answer, some we leave unanswered. But as I've mentioned so many times before, talk is good. And there is a seminar today. Yes. Well, even if it's not so good talk, it clears the air a lot of times. So there is this thing going on today that I heard this morning. I woke up at about, 5:30, so I always listen to the news before I leave the bedroom. And there's a seminar today for teenage mental health. So I'm going to research that. I think it's at noon, and it's here in Palm Beach someplace, West Palm. So I'm going to see if I can go to it. You and I will talk after the show about it and see if you're available to go as well. And I thought I would call our little friend that calls up a lot and see if she'd like to go as well. But let's get started on Monday's show so we don't run out of time. Monday, we recognized Martin Luther King, and we talked about the fact that we didn't think he was trying to enrage people to fight for their rights. He was fighting for the right to stand up for yourself, the right to have peace, the right to get along with each other. He's never been an advocate of anything other than peaceful ways of working through things. and an amazing person way, way, way before his time. Mm-hmm. Would you like to share something about Martin Luther King?
Well, pretty much what you're saying is that his message to all people, I mean, it was directed at black people, but it was also his wish that all people would become colorblind. And by saying colorblind, he meant blind to all the attributes of another human being, not judging somebody by what they look, by what religion they were, by how tall they were, whether they were a male or a female. His message was very broad in scope, and although at that time there was no equality between whites and blacks, and he was railing against that, he was railing against it in a peaceful and compassionate way, which is really the only way to bring around positive change. You can't bring about positive change through violence. It just, violence begets violence, and that's a cliche that's been around forever. So his message was very powerful in that, and that if you want change, change yourself and do it in a peaceable way. That doesn't mean you sit back and take it. He wasn't telling people to ignore what was happening to them, but he was telling people to assemble peaceably. You know, if you're going to let people know that things need to change and you want to assemble into peaceable masses. Don't riot. Don't create violence. Because then you're part of the problem, not part of the solution. So it was a very powerful message in that regard.
Well, and his thought process was one of total equality, which we're still striving for today, and probably mm-hmm. will be until I die and after. So it is a truth that. We need to have equality, because then the rules don't change. Then mm-hmm. the precedence doesn't change if we're all equal. It makes such a huge difference if everybody is considered equal. And I think that was one of the biggest things that he was trying to promote. And you and I, of course, have talked and talked and talked about equality, about our friends that are without sight and love each other so much, and it doesn't matter what they have, you know, what they look like, what they have never seen is irrelevant, because they love each other. They
right.
don't love each other because of the way they look, or because of, you know, anything else other than their souls.
Uh-huh.
And that's beautiful. That is really beautiful. And if we could get to a place that was even close to that, I guess you can't take away what you can see, you know.
And, you know, the whole thing is that I've seen couples throughout my life that were literally blissfully happy. I mean, true relationships. And in one case, the man was very tall and thin, and the woman was like 125 pounds overweight. These were my friends from New York, Robin, and I forgot her husband's name. But they were blissfully happy, and he was like this skinny rail, and yet he absolutely adored her. And when you look at the women he dated, he always dated big girls. It was just his thing. But people would look at him and think that, you know, they didn't understand the match. And yet he absolutely adored her. So, you know, when they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder, it really does lend to that. And I've seen the reverse. I've seen absolutely gorgeous women, drop-dead gorgeous, model gorgeous women married to men that they were really, really in love with. It wasn't for money or something, that were like homely as sin, and yet there was true, there was a rapport there was a connection, and they truly, truly loved each other. I've seen a couple of marriages like this, or relationships, you know, and it really does lend to the, you know, that it has nothing to do with our physical appearance. We really, when we allow ourselves to get past the appearance of somebody, we do connect on a much deeper level. And when you get to this colorblindness or this not prejudging people and not looking at the obvious, not seeing that somebody is black or Spanish or Jewish or some description where you just look at the person and see how you connect with them, we find that we connect with more people than we think we would. And that's one of the beauties of being human beings, is that there is this underlying connection between all of us if you get rid of all the distraction of what we see and hear.
Amen. Well, and like you just said, there's a lot to be said about, instant response. And if you are judgmental, and most of us are, I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's taught to us at such an early age. We're taught to fear certain things. We're taught to love certain things. We're mm-hmm. taught to be aware of certain things. I mean, if you think about all the different things that you learn when you're a child, there's just so many things that inspire certain emotions, like fear, like hatred, like love as well. You see a puppy, cute little cuddle. You immediately love that puppy. That puppy could have teeth bigger than my toes. And you still, because he has the persona of this sweet, cuddly little thing, you love him. You see a snake, for me, not everybody, I think some people see snakes differently than I do. You see a snake and there's automatic fear. It's the same with people.
People are fascinated by them, some people see them. But the bottom line is most people have an immediate reaction to snakes, that's for sure. Whether it's fascination or fear, most people have some reaction. It's an animal that does bring out intense emotion in people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but what's interesting is that Troy McClain is one of my favorite lecturers. He was the guy who was on the first season of the Apprentice, and he was poor his whole life, and now he's one of the richest men in America. He's extremely successful, and when he went on The Apprentice, his net worth was more than all the other 15 contestants combined. He had gone from stark poverty to a mega millionaire in his lifetime by his own efforts. He wasn't one of these millionaires that inherited it. At any rate, and he lectures now. I've seen him a couple of times in the last 2 years, and he's a wonderful lecturer. And his biggest message is look beyond the obvious. Don't judge people by what you think their value is. And I think one of Martin Luther King's messages, when you talk about equality, because a lot of people are going to have a knee-jerk reaction to that. Well, how can you say this person's equal to me? I'm a college graduate, and they didn't even graduate high school. Or how are you going to compare that person to me? I've been doing this job for 20 years, and they're just coming in the door. So a lot of people, when they hear equality, they have the wrong concept. What we're talking about is equal value. All human beings should have equal value to other human beings, so that when you see someone, when you see a child, when you see an adult, when you see an older person, when you see somebody of a different ethnicity than you, when you see somebody of a different religion, you shouldn't be judging their worth as a human being or their value to society on the differences. What you should do is, because everybody has something to contribute, whether it's small or big, and everybody that contributes to society benefits it. But what happens is when you have people being prejudiced, when you have people minimizing the value of other people, this causes problems in society. It causes violence. It causes crimes. And when we can uplift ourselves from that and see that people have equal value, that's when things are going to dramatically start to change. And that's one of the things that Troy talks about, is seeing beyond the obvious. Don't look at the way somebody looks. Listen to what they say. Listen to how their thought processes are. Ignore all the different descriptions about them and what do they have to say? What are they contributing? Because everybody has value. And when you take the time to see that people have equal value, then you start respecting the differences in people instead of fearing it.
Well, I think that that's the whole point of seeing somebody's soul instead of their shell, so to speak.
Right, exactly.
And it's kind of, a lot of people don't spend enough time paying attention to that kind of thing, and that's one of our big problems. So I think Martin Luther King, as I said, was way ahead of his time and understood all of these things and got the point that it wasn't about that and shouldn't be about that. So I think, again, that times have changed. Things are better than they used to be. You don't walk into a building. I can remember in the 50s walking into even church, and black and white people were separated in church.
I know.
Nobody told them to separate. It was what you did. I can remember, of course, here in Florida, in, I was 11, so 49. So 1950, 1951, there was still, you know, black people weren't allowed on the beach. So we have repaired some of our problems, and I think that is mostly due to people like Martin Luther King, and things are better than they used to be, but they're not. They're still not right. They're still not the way that they should be, and we need to keep working on that, and we need to keep realizing that that's where we need to be eventually. We need to be in a place that is equal. And on that note, I want to say that it's also gotten better for women. And we've talked about that at length, the fact that women had to fight for equality as bad as any other creed, religion, or race ever had to fight for anything. We had to fight for it all. And we are in a better place, thank God. I can't imagine what kind of a bitch I would have been if somebody told me I couldn't do something because I was a woman. I can't, when I try to imagine somebody looking at me and saying, oh, you can't do that, or you can't go in there, or you can't, and I'd be like, excuse me? I mean, I had a fight in the courtroom years ago because somebody told me I couldn't stick up for one of my kids who got in trouble, and I couldn't get a public defender to help them. So I stepped up to the plate and walked in, and the judge had the bailiffs remove me. And I said, you know what? This isn't fair because I'm not a lawyer. I can't speak to the judge.
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing.
She has a point there.
Right.
But, I can't even imagine being in a place where it was accepted by everybody else, including the women standing beside me, that they'd be treated like that. And, of course, I'm sure that our other minorities feel exactly the same way. So we have, you know, it is getting better. It really is getting better. But there's still room for lots and lots of improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, you know, again, maybe by talking, maybe by, you know, sometimes if you're in a really dark building, you have to just start going around turning on the lights, and that's kind of what we're doing.
Well, one of the things that that one of my other favorite lecturers used to say all the time, Kevin Trudeau, and I just love his teachings, he used to say all the time, you can't eliminate darkness. Darkness exists all the time. The only thing you can do is turn on the light to make things better. So instead of, the point being is that instead of trying to get rid of something that you don't like, replace it with something you do like. So if you don't like the fact that maybe some people are bigoted or some people don't treat each other properly, then you be an example when you're in front of those people. Instead of trying to make them change, act in front of them the way they should. Because sometimes people are affected by that and they will start modifying their own behavior. It's easier to be a role model than to give instructions to people, because if somebody, people don't like being told what to do, but sometimes they'll modify their behavior. That's how I have influenced so many people to change their lifestyle. But if I had gone up and told them, oh, you have to do this and you have to do this, they would have dug their heels in and made no positive changes. But just allowing them to see my positive choices and how it was benefiting me, other people decided on their own to give it a shot, and they ended up improving their own lot. So it's really important that if you see things you don't like, you can't really change other people, but you can influence them. So just be good role models, and the more of us that choose to be good role models, we will eventually impact the world.
Well, leading by example, it helps more people than any one other nonviolent, effortless things to do. If you believe in something and you do it the way that you think is best, and it promotes peace, it promotes harmony, it promotes all the things that we all strive for, then mm-hmm. as people, they will certainly learn by your example, and I believe that as well. Okay,
yep.
So let's move on to bullies to buddies. We didn't even talk about the breast implants and reductions. Let me touch on that real quick. What we did find out is that a breast reduction is a very, very strategic surgery. It's not, I had thought, like I said to Shelley, I figured it was just some kind of liposuction where you took out the extra fat that's in a breast, but it isn't.
Right.
And it is a real surgery, and many people are doing it today. Then, of course, the subject of augmentation, that's had a real bumpy road, if you'll excuse the pun. And it's been an experiment that in many cases went very badly.
Right.
And there's a lot of women out there who are now in their 60s and some of them in their 70s who that choice changed their whole lives, and it wasn't for the better. So
right.
I'm sure there's out there that have had, especially the saline implants in later years, that are relatively happy and feel as though it, you know, enhancing your own beauty is good for you because it increases your self-esteem and makes you feel more proud of yourself. So I'm not against that, and not against wearing clothes that you believe flatter you and all those kind of things, makeup. So anything you do that makes you feel better about yourself is important. But
mm-hmm.
I think we kind of rushed into the augmentation way back when,
mm-hmm.
and it really wasn't ready yet, so to speak. And
right.
I think there's a lot of ladies out there who wish they hadn't made that decision. And we also found out that there's a lot of getting the breast reduction as well, which I thought was an interesting fact.
Well, the two comments I'd like to make before we move on to the next subject is that a lot of men and women both don't understand why a woman would get a breast reduction. And quite simply, if the breasts are too large in relation to the frame of the woman is in a lot of pain. All right, it causes problems with the shoulders, with the upper back. It causes pains in the rib cage. It can make the individual overheated because of the mass that's on the rib cage. So the discomfort and outright pain to women whose breasts are so large that they don't match the skeletal frame can be crippling. It can actually prevent them from being able to do certain things. So breast reduction is almost a medical necessity. It is not. It really shouldn't be considered elective surgery because it's actually harming the skeleton of the woman, all right? With breast augmentation, all right, and like you said, all right, it can give, if a woman is very, very small and now they're so small that that's out of relation to their body's frame, it can give them a sense of, better self-esteem and better feelings about their femininity and things like that. But the biggest thing with that, and this has always been, even when they were doing the silicon implants, with any type of plastic surgery, you must research the doctor. There are plastic surgeons out there and doctors that do breast augmentation that are state of the art, that are they're really at the top of their industry. And there are other doctors out there that are cut rate, and they have cut rate prices don't shop price when you're doing something that's going to be permanent to your body. A lot of these tragedies happen because doctors started coming out of the woodwork to do this because there was big money in it, and they didn't have the background. So if you're going to do something that invasive to your body, that permanent, research the doctor. Look, you know, check, see if there have been complaints. Look at the BBB. This type of surgery, you should do extensive research in before you allow the doctor to touch you. So that's the one piece of advice I wanted to add.
Well, and that's true in anything. If you're suffering with any kind of issues, I know that there's so much controversy out there right now about health insurance and all that. And the show, Renee's Heart to Heart, has kind of steered clear from that because there's just so many schools of thought. And frankly, I find it too confusing to even attempt to give any words of wisdom. But I think that everything Shelley said pertains to any kind of medical care that you're seeking. Be careful. Pay attention. You know, if you walk into an office that doesn't have anybody else working there but the doctor, if it's in a part of town that you had to drive up and down the streets until you found the tiny address, come on, everybody. Pay attention to what you're doing. If you're putting your safety, your life, your welfare in the hands of someone else, please be sure their hands are capable. So
exactly.
Let's move please to buddies. We talked a lot about the perception of what is expected of our children and how we, for some reason, have made this the philosophy that's being promoted today, according to Izzy Kalman, and I quite frankly agree, is that you are entitled to live in a world without mean people. If people are mean to you, it has nothing to do with you, your behavior, or your attitudes. It is only because of them. It is not your responsibility to do anything to get people to stop being mean to you. Just inform the authorities when people are being mean to you, and the authorities will make them stop. Now, if you believe that, please call me later today because we need to talk. There is no such thing. There is no such promise. There is no such anything that tells you that you're entitled to have everybody love you.
Right.
No.
Right.
That would be kind of cool, I guess, but there's no such thing.
One of the things that, and I've spoken about this on other shows, I'll be brief, but there is a prevailing attitude, at least I see it a lot in South Florida, there's a prevailing attitude where you're not, if somebody perceives you're being disrespectful to them, they actually feel that they have a right to be physically violent to you. And I see that a lot. I see these types of arguments like in stores and things like that, perfect strangers. One person will look at the other and maybe look at them in a way that seems to be insulting or something, and the other individual is ready to, like, go to fisticuffs with them. You know, who are you looking at? And then all of a sudden this major, you know, don't diss me. And this, I mean, I've seen these arguments, and they're ludicrous to view, but the two individuals are so angry, and this whole thing about, you know, people feel that other people don't have the right to be disrespectful to them. You know, people have the right to have any attitude towards another individual that they want. They can disrespect you. They can think you're a jerk. They can think you're an idiot. Who cares? But the fact that there are so many people today, adults, and now it's trickling down to the children, okay, that feel that other individuals don't have the right to have a negative thought of you. And I think this is a lot of what Izzy's talking about, and that concept is something that's really just surfaced in maybe the last 10 years, and I see it very prevalent here in South Florida. I don't see it so much in other areas because I've traveled a little bit in the last couple of years, but it's very prevalent in South Florida. I'm not sure where it's coming from, but I see a lot of these where people actually have a violent response to another individual acting disrespectful to them, or in a way they think is being disrespectful. Sometimes it's just simply a misunderstanding. So I find that really astonishing.
Well, I think that it is because we tell kids, don't let anybody be mean to you. Sesame Street, for a decade,
talked about big letters on the screen, teaching the alphabet. Who's the most important person? You are. Who is number one? You are. Oh, that's good. That's good. But it's like everything. There was no sense of balance there. It got overboard. It got all about severe cases of me-ism, which I hate. I hate that in children. I hate that in adults. I hate that in anybody. If every decision they make is based on their own personal comfort, they're impossible to live with. They're impossible to be with. They're impossible to be connected to. You have got to think about how your decisions affect the other people around you, especially in a family scenario. So,
The flip side of it, what you just said a few minutes ago, is that, and I watch all these shows, Judge Judy and People's Court and all that, and it's amazing how many people will bring lawsuits into court that are not lawsuits, and they get admonished by the judges. They say, you know, not everything that's bad behavior is a lawsuit and requires the police to get called. Because you see a lot of times there's police reports in these cases, and they actually get yelled at by the judge. What? Why did you call the police over this? This was just an argument between two neighbors. Why did you get the police involved? The police are out there to take care of crimes and violence and people who really need help. And the two of you are arguing with each other and you think it's appropriate to call the police. That's not what the police are for, you know. And the judges get really upset when they have people going to court where over petty disagreements and they've ended up calling the cops on each other. And you see a lot of misuse of the police force because people don't know how to talk things through. They allow their emotions and their anger to get so overboard that they end up not communicating with each other. And that's part of having an immature society. People need to grow up and start acting, you know, stop acting childish. And if you're having a disagreement with another person, figure out how to talk it out and stop being so violent and sticking to your own guns. What would help is looking at things from the other person's perspective. It doesn't mean you're going to change your attitude or your opinion, but if you understand where the other person is coming from, you may be able to help them understand where you're coming from and vice versa. And so that's something that more people should try to do.
Well, and I think it's normal to have a difference of opinion. I think it's appropriate have a difference of opinion. That's how we move forward a lot, is you say it should be this way, I say it should be that way, and together we come to a conclusion that is more serviceable than if we just used my idea or your idea. That's That's what the world is all about. So I think that teaching kids to be open-minded and to embrace other people's school of thought, and even if in the very beginning you think it's wrong because it's different from yours, you should be able to sit back and listen. Just listen first. Don't jump in and try to make sure that you've said the most important thing. Don't jump
in
and
don't always look some authority as your savior. We do have the ability to settle our own differences just by talking things out. You don't have to always go to an authority figure or get the police involved. And that's something where people have actually disabled themselves by abusing the law enforcement.
Yeah, well, and that's – and I've had – I've talked to policemen, especially when all the stuff was happening with my grandson. I met with a lot of policemen, a lot of investigators and people like that, and they said to me, you know – in so many cases, when it comes to, you know, like domestic problems, we're not, matter of fact, I said this. I said, I thought you were the enforcer. That's the way I grew up thinking. You were the enforcer.
Mm-hmm.
You were not the social worker. You were not the mental health clinic. You were not the mediator. You were the enforcer. If somebody was being so bad that nobody else could control them, then they called the policeman. The policeman came and took that person away and gave them time to cool off, and then the other entities made a decision as to whether or not that person needed to be back out in society or didn't. And I believe that's the way it was set up to be. But calling a police because you and your husband can't get along, you know, see a marriage counselor, for God's sakes.
Right. I mean, unless there's some violence going on, but a lot of times the cops are called just during an argument.
Well, and a lot of times that's because everybody involved can't deal with what's going on in their life, so they're under the influence of something synthetic that doesn't have anything to do with what's really going on. So then they get disorderly, and they both just blow off steam. So, but I think that raising our children to understand that those kind of, I've always been very personal about my relationships and who I, you know, how I get along with somebody else and how I don't get along with somebody else. And one thing I learned at a very early age, if you're married, if you're a man or a woman, it doesn't matter. If you go around and constantly, chronically complain about the behavior of your spouse, people that love you are going to hate your spouse. They're going to think that you made a mistake. And then when 10 days later, 2 days later, 15 minutes later, when you're over whatever they, he or she did to you, your friends are still going to be mad at your spouse.
Right.
They're still going to have a very negative opinion of your spouse.
Right.
And you're not going to be mad at him anymore, and now your friends are going to say, you know, why do you stay married to him? And then you're going to have that, you know, that in your life, and you don't need it. I think that's what Izzy's trying to teach us with the kids. Learn how, you know, don't make enemies of everybody. You don't have to be best friends. You don't have, like I used to tell everybody at work, I don't care if you never call each other on the outside. I don't care if you never have dinner together. I don't care if you never have a beer together. I don't care any of that. But when you're here, you have to be okay with each other.
Right.
It is about, you know, how you manage your own social self. And that says a lot about who you are as a person. So, but we gotta move on because, as usual, we're already running out of time, and I know we're going to talk a lot about Wednesday's show. But let me say one last thing in regard to what Izzy said, and it coincides with what you and I just said. We're raising a generation of emotional marshmallows. They believe they're entitled to a life in which no one is permitted to do or say anything to them that they don't like. Please. I wish that was true in some extent. Blame others for their own problems and feelings. That's a biggie, and we all do that. We're all guilty of that. Expect others to solve their social problems for them. I don't know that everybody does that, but I think a lot of us do. Take them so seriously that they don't tolerate anyone making fun of them.
That's a big one.
That's a biggie. And then I know people. Yeah, I know people who go the other way. I tend to go the other way. I make more fun of myself than anybody else would ever have time to do. So, and that's not a good balance either, so just to throw that in there. Get upset by minor physical actions that don't even hurt, you know, like somebody nudging you on a bus or, you know, they didn't do it on purpose. It just happened, and you get that look.
Excited
because of all
and all upset, and yeah.
Yeah, this is MySpace. Don't get in MySpace. How many times have you heard that? This is MySpace. I didn't mean to overstep the invisible boundaries on your space. Sorry. So believe that it's good to inform the authorities on their peers, and that's what we just talked about, like calling the police when you can't handle something that you may have even started in the pot. You know, you may have started it. So, all good information. I think that we have a lot to learn in this workbook. And ironically, it's all about bullying, but it's all about life as well. And we both know that bullying doesn't stop when you're 20. It never stops if you allow it to keep on being a part of your life.
Right.
Wednesday, we talked a lot about cancer. We talked about chemotherapy. We talked about radiation. We talked about sugar being one of our biggest enemies. It's certainly one of my biggest enemies, and I'm still friends with it. So it isn't easy to stop some of those things because for many of us, sugar and pasta, white bread, well, any kind of bread for that matter, except for maybe raw sprouted manna bread. But all those things bring you comfort because they're all the things that you grew up with. And they all, many things. Pancakes for me. And I know I probably could name you right down, if somebody gave me enough time, 100 people who, if they were given the choice at the Last Supper, they'd order pancakes.
So, wow.
You know, that's how the comfort food something like pancakes is.
Well, food is definitely very emotional for us. There's no doubt about that. That's why I think more people live to eat than eat to live, because of that, because that term comfort food is so commonplace in society. Just look at every celebration there is. It's always wrapped around a meal. I mean, Thanksgiving, Christmas, other holidays, you know, 4th of July celebrations, everything is wrapped around food. And there's specific food to each ethnicity, and there's specific food to each holidays. And this is what people look that makes them feel better. You know, you're down, you want to have a cake or ice cream or something. You know, it's just, food is very, very emotional, and it does comfort us. You know, but there is a way, which is kind of cool. There is a way to make better choices and still get a comfort feel from your food. And so one of the main things to let people know is that when you are eating to improve your health, it's just a matter of finding new comfort foods, because there are foods now that are comfort foods to me that weren't even in my diet 10 years ago, but now I do derive comfort from them. So it's an evolution. You can retrain your palate. You can retrain what you like. But it does take a little bit of experimenting to get there, especially if you're eating. So I don't want people to think in order to improve their health that they have to give up everything that means anything to them. There's a lot of alternatives today that can keep you feeling like you're eating things that are familiar, and that's the great thing. Not so much in the raw food movement. It's a little bit more difficult there, but certainly in the vegetarian movement, it's much easier to be able to consume things that are familiar to you, because there's so many alternatives that are made out of plant-based foods and that have a very similar taste and texture to things that you might have seen as a comfort food.
I agree with that, but I want to say something that I didn't say Wednesday, and I have said it before on the show, and I'm going to say it again because it warrants some repetition, and that is the fact that if you are in a store and you are purchasing anything, I don't care whether it's new shampoo, I don't care whether it's a pre-packaged meal. There's a lot of companies out there right now that Shelley and I have talked about on the air that provide no meat products and things like that are prepared. There's also cleaning things, you know, like to clean your bathroom or to, you know, to polish your tables. And if you don't start reading the labels, you never know what you're bringing into your house. You never, ever know. And I think I said this on one show when we talked about green cleaning, and that was the fact that I laughed so hard years ago this happened to me. I had a cleaning service, gosh, for about 6 years, and it was a very successful cleaning service. I was very fussy about the way I left somebody's home or their apartment. I made it look like mom didn't clean it, like a professional cleaned it. I made the towels fancy. I even cleaned out people's brushes and combs and sterilized them. I mean, I did a lot of extra things to make people really appreciate what I did for them. So, but one of the first things I did was ruin somebody's brass bar because I picked up brass polish. Right? Sort of set on the front of the bottle. I went back to their house and started polishing their brass bar. And I read the back of it, and it said you can't you can't use this on anything that has a protective coating on it, a brass that's been coated so that it doesn't turn black all the time. I didn't know anything about anything like that. And I ruined a whole section of this bar. They had to have this all redone, and it's a very expensive thing. Luckily, they loved me, and I didn't get in any trouble, but it taught me to start reading, to not just assume that something was what it said on the front, and to make
sure
that
amazing? Wow, wow. Well, you know, one of the things that I recommend people to do that are becoming aware that maybe there are different choices they should be making, and they get overwhelmed. They're like, well, I don't even know where to start because, I mean, you know, my education has been across 15 years, and I've learned in bits and pieces. It's not like on Friday I use these products, and on Monday, you know, I changed everything. This happened as an evolution, and I learned about one thing at a time. But if you go into a store like Whole Foods or any natural store, any of these stores that sell, you know, like free-range meats and things like that. Whole Foods is like the easiest one because like most people know that they're out there. Go up and down the cleaning aisle. Go up and down the where they sell the shampoos and read the bottles, and you're going to see no parabens, no SLS, no lauryl sulfates. You're going to pick up the antibacterial hand soaps, and it's going to say no triclosan. So when you see that all their products are free of something, then you can go on the Internet and research that, okay, what's the deal with triclosan? Why would they be selling products free of triclosan? And then you learn that triclosan is actually a toxin, okay? You don't need that in your antibacterial soap because there are natural antibacterials that are completely safe to the body, like grapefruit seed extract, tea tree oil. There's so many of them out there. There are cleaners, instead of using chlorine bleach, which is extremely toxic to the environment, there are non-chlorine bleaches that use hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide is very safe to the environment and as effective as chlorine bleach. There's something like 33 different uses for hydrogen peroxide. I have this whole article saved on my computer. In fact, we could probably devote a whole show just to the benefits of hydrogen peroxide over chlorine bleach one day, because chlorine bleach is very hazardous to the environment, and it's also hazardous to our health, you know, and it's not needed to disinfect and clean. There are other cleaners out there that are much safer and just as effective. So it's things like that. So if you go through a Whole Foods store or a health food store, look at the products and see what they say they're free of. And that's going to give you an indication of what you should be looking for. And a lot of times, you can't find these products in regular department stores like Publix and Walgreens and stuff. They don't sell these products that are free of these things.
I tried to interrupt you, but I don't think you heard me. A little sidebar about hydrogen peroxide, just so people know. Hydrogen peroxide, like Shelley said, has many, many uses. But one of the things I want to mention to everybody, just in case they never knew this before, hydrogen peroxide will take out blood stains, and with not a lot of effort, by the way. So if that's ever one of the issues that you're struggling with, it will remove blood out of, like, say, a bed mattress, things like that. So, and I often use hydrogen peroxide to clean the top of the stove. I mean, it bubbles right up just like it would if you put it on your skin. So it is, and there's also food-grade hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide that's food-grade can be sprayed on plants to subdue mildew and things like that. So there's a lot of uses, and you're right, Shelley, we should do a show about hydrogen peroxide because it is amazing, and it does give us a lot of choices to use it for. But we also talked about the sugar, the cancer program, and sugar feeds cancer cells. And that's why we talked about that. I don't know whether those words ever came out of any of our mouths that day or not. I didn't remember us saying that other
than
that.
Yeah, I think Monica had mentioned that.
Okay. It does feed cancer cells. And when we would get young people at the Institute, and they would say to me, Matter of fact, Shelley and I have talked about this young man before. He was like 14 and he had brain cancer. And tried to come up with quinoa and all different things, make them as tasty as I could for them so he'd eat things like that for breakfast. And I'm sitting with him one day and we're talking, and I would send Mom and Dad for a walk so that he could just be with me and talk freely. And he said, please tell me, Renee, that I will be able to eventually eat McDonald's French fries. And I said, you miss them that much? And he goes, yes. I said, well, actually, somewhere down the road, eating a potato probably won't hurt you. I said, but I don't think that I could recommend McDonald's French fries. And he goes, why? And I said, because I'm not really sure how they process those French fries. Years ago when McDonald's first opened, they used real potatoes. I was friends with a manager at a McDonald's back in the 60s, and they used real potatoes. That's not true anymore. And
right.
I said, because yeah. of the preservatives and everything that go into the frozen French fries, I'm going to say to you that may be dangerous. But there could
right.
be a time down the road when you could do maybe not French fries, but maybe French baked potatoes. And he laughed. And he says, it's really going to make me sad. So it is, there are so many things that people have to give up. But the potato, a white potato, and like I said, the white flour, the pastas, all of those things, once they get in your body, have carbohydrates in them. And
right.
you have to be careful with that. So,
well, it produces sugar. Anything that's white, like you said, the white flour, white sugar, white potatoes. Now, interestingly, sweet potatoes is actually a better option for somebody who is concerned about cancer or other things like candida that are fed by sugar. Candida is also another illness that's really fed by sugars. And sweet potato is actually less in sugar than a white potato. You'd think it'd be the opposite, but it's not. So if you take a sweet potato and you steam it, it's very hearty. You know, it gives you the feeling of substantial food. This is one of the things I did during that 2.5 years that I became a raw foodist, because did have a little bit of cook. I used to have a big plate of steamed vegetables in the evening, and I always included sweet potato. It was substantial. It was hearty. It made me feel good, but it didn't have any. It didn't give me the sugar throw off, so I was able to rid myself of candida and some of the other conditions I had. It was very effective. But with regard to the sugar, there are so many sugar alternatives out there that anybody, even if you don't have a health issue, should really look to. Stevia is one of them, and xylitol is another. Very, very safe. And I'm not talking about Truvia. There are some products out there now that are really just kind of they're just falling into the hype about stevia. Truvia has got other chemicals in it. It's not a pure product. It's not really any better. You might as well just keep eating sugar then. But there is Stevita, Stevia, Xylitol. Those are all very, very good products. You have to learn how to use Stevia, though, because if you use too much of it, it can make something taste bitter. So it takes a little bit of finessing. Xylitol is a little bit closer to sugar in because you can get it powdered. It actually measures out like sugar. Xylitol is probably a little bit closer to sugar content. I use Stevita Supreme, which is a combination of stevia and xylitol, and very, very good product. But there's a lot of sugar alternatives out there that will still give you that comfort feel of having a sweetness to your food, and yet won't. It has absolutely no no sugar throw off. And it's also, and stevia, by the way, is also the stevia plant. Is also good for the pancreas. So not only is it safe, but it's beneficial for people that have diabetes and things like that.
Yeah, well, I think that I think all that is true as well. But like I'm saying, you know, in the beginning, you are certainly worth anybody out there, is certainly worth the effort of making yourself better. You're certainly worth the going without or making changes and everything that will save your life. Many years ago, a lovely woman that I became very close to came over and said to me, you know, I can't handle this. Do I really have to do this? And I said, I don't know. Do you? And she said, what does that mean? And I said, well, it means, are you trying to live out the rest of your life? Or you don't care whether you live out the rest of your life? Cancer made the decision that you weren't going to live any longer. And now it's your decision as to whether or not you fight the cancer or you don't fight the cancer. And she says, God, I hate when you say things like that to me. And I said, well, you know, you're wanting me to make a decision for you, and I'm not going to. Is your life worth you giving up some of these things, or isn't it? That's the choice. That is the choice.
You know what I think would make a great show, Rainey, because this is a really, really big issue for people. I think that we should devote a show, and I think Monica would be able to help with this as well, to share recipes for comfort food, health foods, for things that mimic what we're used to, but are made from ingredients that would actually benefit our health. I have some of those recipes, like I said, some of the things I've replaced with. I bet Monica has some too. That might be a good show to actually demonstrate to people. If we can give them a few really good recipes on the show, then they might be able to say, well, if I can substitute this, this, and this for this, it might help people to be a little creative and move forward on their own, making better choices and just experimenting a little bit with better choices.
Okay. What kind of healthy recipes are we talking about? Are we talking about healthy recipes that fight cancer, healthy recipes that are just healthy to keep you healthy? We need to hone in on that, otherwise the topic will be too large. Are we talking about cancer?
If you're fighting cancer, you're fighting anything. I mean, the bottom line is any healthy diet is going to fight any disorder. So you don't have to say it's for cancer. It's for repairing the body. You would use the same foods for cancer as you would for diabetes, as you would for heart disease. It's all the same foods.
Yeah, but it makes it too. It makes the topic way too big. I think
then
we
need
to hone
in. So let's say for cancer.
Okay.
And
all
that's,
right. Yeah,
that's
I'm
really
with
the one that's people the most, I think.
I will touch base today with Monica, and we'll talk about that, and then the three of us can talk. But we're down to 2 minutes, and I haven't touched base on Thursday, but that's okay because we've talked a lot about McMath, and the big thing, though, was about the rights, our rights that are being slowly, again, removed from us. We talked about, ironically, Monday's show and Thursday's show are really connected. Because here's a man who fought to get us equality so that we all have the same rights. And now we find out that, very slowly, I spoke with a lawyer yesterday. I said, did you know that you could take a minor's picture without permission from the parents? He goes, no, I didn't know that, Rainey. I said,
did
you know that my 17 grandchildren can give blood in school and get promised a movie ticket without calling me and asking if it's okay? And he goes, no, I had no idea that they could do that. I said, every day, something else is just being very quietly removed from our rights in regard to our children and in regard to our, for that matter. So that's really what I honed in on the Jahi McMath story, was the fact that these people are fighting for the life. And my good God, if they take away that right to fight for your child's life, where does that mean we're headed? Where does
that
mean we're going? It's a very, very scary topic for me. And because of all the other stories we've done recently, I know that it's getting worse and worse and worse. And I think we need to think about that, and I think we need to talk about that again. But we don't have time today. We're out of time. I want to wish everybody a beautiful, beautiful weekend. If you haven't been to the South Florida Fair, that's still going on, I think, until the 2nd of February. It's a great time, lots of fun, lots of things to look at, as well as rides to ride. And speaking of sugar, you can get a fried energy. So everybody have a great go out there and do the best you can and try to forgive the people that you never forgave before. God bless and have a great weekend. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Renee. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. We'll speak to you on Monday.